Last session, we finished the dedication of the Temple of Solomon and saw the beginning of all of the worship ceremonies. And so now we're ready for kind of just looking at the climax of the Solomonic Empire and how it becomes famous all over the ancient world. So I want you to go to 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. There is a parallel that you should be aware of in 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse number 11. I believe is where it's at. Verse 22 is where that parallel is in chapter 9 of 2 Chronicles. 1 Kings 4:29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure. We already knew about that. That happened early on in his life. And so now it's kind of becoming known outside of Israel. And breadth of mind like the sand of the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the East. That's basically the Middle East, as we know. And all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all the men, the other men, wiser than Etan, the Ezrahite, which we don't know much about him. I think he has a psalm that's somehow connected to him. And Heman, another psalmist who apparently is pretty smart, Calcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol. Now, apparently Solomon eclipsed these other guys so much that we don't even really know much about these guys being smart. And his fame was in all the surrounding nations. So, the Solomonic Empire stretches from the Gulf of Aqaba on the south all the way up to the bend in the Euphrates River, from the Mediterranean coastline over beyond the Jordan River to the very edge of what today is called the Empty Quarter, the Arabian Desert. So he has a really good-sized area that he leads in this time of world history. Now, it's not all Israelis living there. A lot of the perimeter of that region are non-Israelis, Gentiles, that have come under Solomon's leadership because some of it was because of David's military actions during his kingdom, making them part of the Davidic Empire, but also because some of them just want to be close allies of this up-and-coming emperor of the Israeli people. Now, verse 32 talks a little bit more about the displays of his wisdom. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs. We're getting ready to go into the book of Proverbs next, and there are not 3,000 proverbs in there. So he did more than what we have access to through the direction of the Holy Spirit's inspired writing down of proverbs. His songs were 1,005. Now, I think I've only shared with you two of his psalms so far. So he apparently wrote a lot more than what we have access to in our inspired Bible. He spoke of trees. We don't have any of the descriptions of trees of him. From the cedar that's in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish. So he apparently was interested in God's creation, and he liked to write things down about these occupants of creation. Again, we don't have access in the sacred scripture of all of that catalog that he must have written down, because it's probably not important to the salvation story. And people of all nations, all ethnic groups, came to hear the wisdom of Solomon and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. So he becomes a draw for people of the eastern end of the Mediterranean basin to seek him out. And eventually, he even kind of plays with them, games of trying to unravel puzzles. When we get to the story of the Queen of the South, the Queen of Sheba, she'll want to try to stump him with things and can't do it. Now, this influx of attention from all over the eastern Mediterranean basin, it ends up making Israel very wealthy and in need of great organization for the kingdom's sake. And even though we haven't talked about the building of his governmental complex, when he builds it, he builds it to make room for all of these people from all over the place that are coming in to see him. And he has a lot of people helping him out in his kingdom. That's what the first part of 1 Kings chapter 4 is about. Now, I have reduced a lot of the names that are in the first 19 verses of 1 Kings 4 to a chart. And I'm going to be reading from that chart right now. The first part of it comes from the first six verses of chapter 4, and it's his chief advisors. The high priest under Solomon was Azariah the son of Zadok. The secretaries were Elihoreph and Ahiya, the sons of Shisha, while the recorder was Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilub. Now, what's the difference between a secretary and a recorder? I couldn't tell you, but apparently there was some distinction in Israeli understanding between the two. The head of the Israeli army was Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada. The head priests were Zadok and Abiathar, at least at the very beginning of his kingdom. The head of the deputies, which they get mentioned in the next section, was Azariah, the son of Nathan. The king's friend, which is probably a close personal advisor, was Zabud, the son of Nathan, and he was a priest. That's probably a good place to take your chief advisor from. The head of the royal household, probably the guy that takes care of everything in the complex, his name was Ahishar. And then the head of forced labor, meaning everybody that didn't really have a choice. They had to go and do certain jobs. This actually may be people that were captured under David's wars and ended up becoming laborers in Israel. Could be people who had engaged in criminal behavior, and part of their punishment was having to do forced labor. And so the guy that's running all of that is Adoniram, the son of Abda. Now, from chapter 4, verse 7 through 19, you have a list of regional deputies that are charged with provisioning the royal household month by month, because it takes a lot of supplies to run an empire's household at the headquarters and take care of all the people attached to it. And so what we find is there are 12 duty groups, because it's one for each month. And I'm not going to give you all the names here. I'm going to just mention the regions that they came from. You have the hill country of Ephraim. Then you have the country to the east of Judea and Jerusalem that includes Beth Shemesh. That area down toward the coast, they're responsible. Then you've got an area that's related to the valley of Elah, where David defeated Goliath. They're responsible for providing things for an entire month. Then the height of Dor, which is there's a mountainous area just to the south of the Jezreel Valley that's called the height of Dor, and apparently they're responsible for an entire month. Taanach, Megiddo, Bashan, that's all associated with the Jezreel Valley. They were responsible for an entire month. Ramoth-Gilead in the towns of Yair, that's over in Bashan, and Gilead on the east side of the Jordan. They're responsible for providing provisions. Mahanaim, which we know is one of the royal cities. It's a fortified city. David spent some time there. It personally is responsible for an entire month. The tribal area of Naphtali is responsible for an entire month. The tribal region of Asher is responsible for an entire month. Issachar is responsible for an entire month. Benjamin is responsible for an entire month. And then another area of Gilead is apparently responsible for an entire month. And so this goes through a rotation, and it's all to make sure that the headquarters of the Empire of Solomon runs smoothly all year round. Now, 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 20 says that Judah and Israel were as many as the sand by the sea. So that's a way of describing too many to really count comfortably, which was a fulfillment of the prophecy that had been made to Abraham. They ate and they drank and they were happy. So the first 20 years or so of Solomon's kingdom, it was the gravy years. It was the wonderful, prosperous years of the Solomonic Empire. Everybody was enjoying it. Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the Euphrates, that's the bend in the Euphrates, north of the Baca Valley, to the land of the Philistines, that's all the way down to the Wadi al-Arish, which is the river of Egypt that we talk about in Scripture. So it's the south border. And they brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. So everybody is paying support to the centralized government of the Solomonic Empire. Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour and 60 cores of meal. Now, each core is 6 bushels. And so this is one day's provisions in the palace that he's going to build, where he's got people coming in all the time. That's a lot of grain that they're going through. 10 fat oxen, 20 pasture-fed cattle, 100 sheep, besides the deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. Really, what you should think about is that the Palace of Solomon was like a huge hotel where there, and we're talking about top-of-the-line hotel, where there are diplomats and heads of state constantly coming and staying. And so that's really what we're seeing here, is what the kitchen needs, what the hotel restaurant needs to see to the needs of all these important persons coming through. Verse 24, for he had dominion over all the region west of the Euphrates from Tifsa to Gaza, over all the kings west of the Euphrates. So again, basically from that bend in the Euphrates southward, clear down to the deserts of the Sinai Peninsula. All of that region is part of his empire, and even the Gentile kings are under kings under him, and they're constantly either coming themselves or sending their representatives to Jerusalem. He had peace on all sides around him. Remember, his name means peaceful. And that's exactly how his kingdom starts. Unfortunately, it will not be how his kingdom ends, but that is a story for another day. Judah and Israel lived in safety from Dan even to Beersheba, from the north to the south. So now we're talking about Israelis specifically. They felt very comfortable and at peace. Every man under his vine and under his fig tree. It's a very colorful way of saying that nobody worried about anything and everybody had what they wanted. Everybody was quite relaxed and provisioned. And that happened for all the days of Solomon, right up until the last few years, just the last handful of years, and then trouble started. Solomon also had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. Now, right there, that is a red flag. This is probably a number that comes from the tail end of his kingdom, when he lost connection with God and started being, well, we can't candy coat this, started being tyrannical. Thinking that he had to maintain control of his empire by military might, which God had warned long before that no Israeli king was ever to multiply to himself wives, that's political might, horses or chariots, that's military might. And then these officers supplied provisions for King Solomon and for all who came to King Solomon's table, each one in his month. And that's the list we already went over. They let nothing be lacking. Barley also, and straw for the horses and swift steeds they brought to the place where it was required, each according to his duty. So all of this is the logistics of his kingdom. You got a lot of horses, you're going to have a lot of fodder for them. And when I've been to Israel several times now, and we go to Megiddo, it is one of the places that Solomon had stables for his horses and chariot horses. And they would have had barns and granaries there to keep all the stuff they needed to keep those horses fueled up and ready to go. Same things were said over in 2 Chronicles 9:22 that I told you about. Let's read it as a reminder and kind of zoom in on a couple of things that are not in the king's passage. 2 Chronicles 9:22, thus King Solomon excelled all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. All the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put into his mind. So that's why people are constantly coming to Jerusalem and to the palace there because they want to engage with him. Every one of them brought his present, articles of silver, of gold, garments, myrrh, spices, horses and mules, so much, year by year. So people are bringing tribute to be part of this empire, but they're also bringing gifts because they want to spend time with this amazing man, King Solomon. Then it mentions the stalls of horses and the chariots and all of those that he stationed in chariot cities, and then some of them were also in Jerusalem itself. It would appear that the southeast corner of the modern-day Temple Mount is built over the remains or the ruins of where Solomon's stables were located when Jerusalem was his king, or his capital city of his kingdom, because that's mentioned in association with one of the gates whenever they were rebuilding them. And then verse 26, he ruled over all the kings from the Euphrates and the land of the Philistines to the border of Egypt. Then we come to this. And the king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stone. And he made cedar as plentiful as the sycamore of the Shephelah. So basically, there was so much wealth coming into the Solomonic Empire that silver was no big deal anymore. And cedar, which used to be a really big deal, was also no big deal, because the Solomonic kingdom and the Solomonic capital is just swimming in wealth. And then he had horses imported from Egypt and from other lands. And so that is a description of how Solomon's empire, after he'd finished building the temple by the 12th year of his kingdom, begins to explode into this amazing destination for the entire eastern end of the Mediterranean basin. Now, Solomon has a son, his oldest son, that we know will be 41 years old when Solomon dies after 40 years on the throne. So that tells us that he was born a year or so previous to David declaring Solomon king. So that means if Solomon took up to his 12th year to build the temple and dedicate it, that this son would be 13 or 14, right around the time that the temple is dedicated and the things that we're talking about here, that Solomon's wisdom and his wealth starts really piling up. Well, that's the age that you want to start talking to your kids to make sure that they're on track with being good adults. So guess what? The book of Proverbs is generated by King Solomon right around this time. And so we are now going to turn our attention for many sessions, several weeks, I imagine, to look at the Proverbs that Solomon generated to help out his eldest son, but also all of his sons, all of his kids. Proverbs chapter number 1, verse number 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And then he has the reason for these Proverbs. To know wisdom and instruction. So Solomon received supernatural wisdom himself, but now he needs for his sons, his kids, to soak that stuff up. And that means some study, some memorization. So to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, so how to do the right things. That will be very important, especially for the eldest son, to know how to make good decisions. But all of his sons will probably have roles in the government as well. They need that same thing. But it needs to be, as he says here, in righteousness, justice, and equity. That's foundational. Now, unfortunately, that will be abandoned by Solomon later. But this is early in his kingdom. 12th, 13th year, I'm guessing he's writing this down. Verse 4, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. So somebody that's simple doesn't mean that they have mental problems. It means that they are naive. They are still thinking like a young person, an immature person. And so Proverbs are intended to help mature that person's thinking process. And knowledge and discretion to the youth, all young people start out immature in their thinking process. They need assistance to grow in that. Verse 5, let the wise hear and increase in learning. So if you're already wise, get better at it. And the one who understands obtain guidance. Hey, if you already appreciate learning, you're always wanting more. And to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. So trying to unravel the mysteries of life and interaction between and among people. That's what the book of Proverbs is all about. And so next time we come back, we will dive in to the controlling elements of wisdom.